funny feeling that there's something wrong. Went into the kitchen to find the food was gone. Went to the bedroom and put on my clothes. Walked into the street to find the shops were closed. There were no trams running and the petrol was all gone. People in a panic, all hysterical and crying. So we all yelled out, forgive us.
G'day fellow white Aussies and welcome to episode 1 of the Australian Racist News Report. I'm Obadiah118, the proprietor of the ChristianIdentityForum.net, and I am your host. Every week this show will focus on a major news story or stories here in Australia and dissect them under a racial and biblical spotlight. And those two terms are not mutually exclusive, as the Bible is the most racist book ever written. These will be stories warning us that we whites as a race will diminish to the point of extinction in this country and in others unless we turn back to God. Christian identity is Christianity in its purest form. CI asserts, as the Bible does, that only the white Adamic race are the true sons and daughters of the living God. God chose the Hebrew, come Israelite, branch of the Adamic race to bring all of the other branches of that racial tree to him. The devil also has children. They're known today as Jews. Almost everybody, even most white nationalists, believe that the Jews are the Israelites of the Bible, when in fact it's the Adamic race, the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Germanic and related peoples who comprise Israel. Israel in the Bible isn't a place, it's a people. I cover these subjects in greater depth on my other podcast, Christian Identity Australia, but if you want to learn about them more fully, I've posted some book collections in the Christian Identity Primer section of my forum to that end. The Who is Israel book collection explains who and where the Israelites of the Bible are today, and the Jews are of the Devil book collection explains who and what the Jews are. All of the books are in PDF format and downloadable, so you can read them online or off. I did say that this will be a weekly show, and I'll be the first to admit that I have a very poor track record when it comes to getting podcasts out on time. I posted a show about 2 months ago, and on it I said that the next edition of CI Oz would be out in a fortnight. Well, 2 months later, and I still haven't posted the show. What can I say? Life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. So the best I can do is promise you that I will endeavour to post one of these news reports every week. We'll see how we go. Or how I go. On July the 5th this year, the Channel 7 Current Affairs show, Sunday Night, featured a story called Foreign Farmers Buying Up Australia. Here's an audio grab of the intro.
Who owns Australia? The answer is pretty stunning. Nobody really knows. A recent stampede of overseas buyers in the city and the country has brought a new effort by the government to track and control foreign ownership. But it's a major game of catch-up. Cashed-up foreign buyers have made big waves in our metropolitan real estate market. But it's in the bush where concern is really building about the impact of overseas ownership. China is leading the foreign foray, and plenty worry the recent signing of the free trade agreement is only going to magnify China's interest in acquiring swathes of Australian farmland and all that goes with it to feed its enormous population. And as the buyers fly in, many farmers are in no position to hold on to their properties. A busload of Chinese visitors heads into the outback west of Townsville, Queensland.
Townsville is a beautiful city.
This is no holiday sightseeing tour. They're among the many foreign investors sizing the place up, inspecting our cattle country, the livestock, the land, the opportunities. The whole box and dice. Wow. They're cashed up buyers on a shopping spree.
at a time that couldn't be better for the Chinese, or worse for a lot of Australian farmers.
Stop green. Stop.
These are tough times for many, some forced off the land they love. But the country towns on the itinerary are in desperate need of investment, hoping this busload of visitors will bring money and jobs.
Pleased to meet you.
What do you think about Chinese investment?
I think the investment is good as long as it's governed by Australians.
Is there any guarantee of that?
I don't think there's a guarantee of anything in life, is there?
The visitors have deep pockets and a bold plan to make a deal with the Australians, not just for their land, but for the whole supply chain.
What's the total quantity of live cattle in your yard?
In these yards?
Yeah, the maximum.
Feed a cattle, 6,000.
6,000.
Buying the farms, the livestock, the sale yards, the transportation.
The Chinese have been snapping up residential properties in Australia and still are. But as you heard in the clip, they're also snapping up some of our biggest farms. And they seem to have more money than there are Chinese. How much money? In this next clip, the reporter Chris Barth asks Professor Zhang Yui Zhao, an expert in world food supply and demand, that same question.
How cashed up are they?
They got fair bit money to invest.
What's a fair bit?
At the moment, China has more than $3 trillion. This money has to be used overseas.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
As you've probably gathered, this doesn't bode well for us white Aussies in respect to the cost and availability of farming produce here in the future. Jim Whelan, one of the farmers interviewed in the report, has this to say about the worsening situation.
China and Indonesia and those big population countries are after what we've got. Fertile, clean, green food. And then we'll import all the toxic stuff. We'll have no farmers doing. Eventually we'll buy our land out and take all our good productive food back there.
Now this next clip is the linchpin of the report and sums up what is really going on here.
The Chinese government knows that they've got to feed their people.
So they own the farm, they own the sale yards, they own the transportation.
That's right.
No Australians needed, is that what you're saying?
No Australians needed. No Australians needed, and that's a major concern.
So the greenery you've got at the moment is really a green drought.
It is. Yeah. It had...
John Codrington is a business advisor who grew up in the bush and is in big demand helping farmers in crisis. Over the past year, he's become increasingly alarmed at the number of properties falling into foreign ownership.
Are the Chinese coming here in numbers to buy up Australian land?
The Chinese, from what we can see, what we're seeing, are certainly looking at acquiring agricultural land in order to be able to feed their own people, not to feed Australians.
Codrington says at the end of that clip that the Chinese are doing this, quote, in order to feed their own people, not to feed Australians, unquote. So what we have is an alien race permitted by our quisling politicians to march into our country and buy up all of the major food-producing land, leaving little to nothing for us. Where are we supposed to get our food from in the future? And even if we can get it, will we have the money to be able to buy it? The cost of Australian beef has already risen sharply owing to the vast number of cattle that have died because of drought. And when you factor in soaring levels of unemployment and the scarcity of fruit, vegetables and grains in the near future, thanks to all the Chinese farms shipping most of it off to China, only the rich and the Chinese will be eating well. Aussie farmers could, of course, choose not to sell their farms, but as this next clip shows, most of them have little choice, and the ongoing agricultural crisis in this country is taking an appalling toll in terms of its human cost.
Farming runs in Jim Whelan's DNA. For 150 years and seven generations, they've been working the land. It's a life they shared with their four children, and until a few years ago, it was a good life.
It's what you love and you really enjoy that lifestyle. he wouldn't want to live anywhere else.
We went for a walk down there.
They owned two big stations, Kalata and Dixie. In all, 1.7 million acres of wild cattle country in the Gulf.
Dixie was big.
Big, a bit rough.
Just under a million acres.
Hot, very hot. It seems like it's isolation. We're isolated from certain amenities, but you're not isolated because you love it there.
In 2009, a devastating bushfire swept across one of the Whelan stations, destroying thousands of cattle. Then drought caused stock prices to plummet.
A lot of bank managers don't realise that drought would have to be one of the most soul-destroying things that can ever happen to you.
In 2011, the federal government banned the shipment of live cattle.
There was just no money, just nothing coming in. And what came in, the bank took.
The Whelan's bank then devalued their properties, wiping $3 million off their land. Everyone, especially the oldest of the Whelan children, Mac, who was 16, did their best to keep the station alive.
And then, of course, there was the unfortunate incident with their son, which was a result of financial pressures that they were being put under.
They were forced to sell Dixie in 2012. On August the 3rd, 2013, Mac was found dead on the Dixie property. He'd shot himself.
So our world fell to pieces and you can't think straight and
the hardest of times for the Whelans didn't ease up in the months after Mac's death. Within weeks, bank representatives came calling again.
And Jim was told by one of them, more or less, to get over Mac's death and get on with it.
Little miserable person that, you know, you wouldn't put up with it out here, but what can you do?
Suicide rates among Australian farmers are significantly higher than those among the rest of the population. There has been some debate as to what the exact figures are. Bob Catter claims they're four times higher than the national average, but the government's figures show that they're only 1.6 times higher, and those figures include people such as day labourers and fruit pickers. But whatever the correct figures are, and I suspect they lie somewhere between Catter's figures and the government's, they're sure to rise in the future as more farmers are forced off the land by drought and by bank foreclosures. God made us whites to be workers of the soil. We're all supposed to have a large plot of land on which we can grow crops and be self-sufficient. Crammed together like battery hens in cities and the suburbs, as most of us are, is not his will for us. He wants us to live where there is plenty of space between us and the next person. If you can stand in your front yard and throw a tennis ball so that it lands in your neighbour's front yard, you're living far too close to him. White farmers and their families have a connection to the land that's more than just financial, it's spiritual. And when they're forced to leave their land, the loss is so devastating that many of them simply cannot bear it and take their own lives.
That's my home, it's a stranger in my home. I didn't bloody well cost myself this place, neither did my husband or my children. Bastard banks.
Kate's daughter, 21-year-old Brittany, is also with us.
I'm not going over there.
No, I can't. Come on,
she spent her teenage years on the station. A court order prevents her mum from stepping onto the property.
So, that's as far as you can go.
That's as far.
They're heart and souls in the place, but it's painfully out of reach.
So you must miss it.
I really do. I know some kids of parents that are watching the game for the same thing I have. And you don't have nice thoughts when you watch this happen. You don't.
What sort of thoughts do you have?
Don't want to live. Really?
So young.
That's what I thought. I don't want to live because it's just so hard. I'm a bush kid. I've been to the city. I know what it's like. And it makes me really proud and happy to be able to produce food for your kids, your nieces, you know, your grandkids. I want to do that. I don't belong in the city. I don't belong there. And my city friends will tell you I don't either. They'll tell you I don't belong in it. I don't.
But you belong here.
Yeah. And there was a lot of people thinking their thoughts, and there's some that have already done it. And that's not fair. How's that fair? It's not fair.
It's bloody awful.
Yeah, but you don't hear about the kids in the bush as much wanting to knock themselves. But they do. We all think that. But we don't. I don't. I didn't. I won't. It just, I don't know. Just can't. I want to fight. I've got to fight.
Bob Catter was interviewed in the report, and he makes no bones about how all of this is going to pan out for the host population of this country.
Last month, Australia and China signed a free trade agreement that's supposed to boost business between the two countries.
Investment's a lovely word. What investment means is selling your country off to foreigners. It's not like investors, they're not opening up mines or building dams or anything of that nature. They're just buying the asset that is there. So it's not investment, it's selling your country off.
Bob Catter is the outspoken federal member for Kennedy, which includes Charters Towers. His family were among the early settlers here. He says China is getting a bargain.
They control the retail market for meat in China. So whilst we sell for $2.50 a kilogram, our cattle, it sells in China for $30 or $40 a kilogram. Australia looks very attractive. So the future must belong to a total Chinese ownership of all rural Australia. I mean, that's the economics of what I'm talking about.
Now, you'll have to admit that Catter offers some pretty bleak commentary there. He says that beef goes for $2.50 a kilo here, but upwards of $30 a kilo in China, which he says will eventually control all of the rural land in Australia. This means we can look forward to a T-bone steak costing more than 10 times what it does now. Don't believe any of that BS from the government about how it's going to take steps to curtail this Chinese spending spree. Any penalties and restrictions it imposes will barely amount to a slap on the wrist. So far, we've heard from a host of white Australians about this issue, but what do the Chinese have to say about it?
Should Australians be fearful of Chinese investment, or should we embrace it?
Well, I think it's like this. The precondition is it must be benefit to the final consumer, benefit for the farm owner, and it must be encouraged to Chinese investment.
Like that.
I will tell you, 99% of the Chinese are very friendly.
So you don't need to be careful.
Never be scared.
Did you hear that great news? Us white Aussies have nothing to fear because 99% of Chinese are very friendly. Well, there you go. But this next and last clip paints a much different picture of these smiling, handshaking, very friendly, cashed-up Chinese.
On this trip, the Chinese are shopping for a million head of cattle and scoping for land, processing businesses, transport and shipping.
I am from Guangzhou.
Mr. Ma Renhong is leading the delegation. He also has his eye on another key investment opportunity, the port of Townsville. If all goes according to plan, Mr. Ma would raise cattle on a Chinese-owned farm, process the cattle in Charters Towers at a Chinese-owned plant, transport it to a Chinese-controlled wharf in Townsville, and ship it all back home on Chinese-owned ships. And there's one other thing. Negotiated along with our new free trade agreement with China, 5,000 Chinese workers can get jobs in Australia.
The only reason you're going to bring Chinese workers in this country is that you have to pay them a hell of a lot less and get a hell of a lot more work hours out of them.
As a result of growing pressure on the government to get a handle on who owns what in Australia, for the first time, foreign owners of farmland have to register with the Australian Taxation Office. The register opened last week, and they have until the end of the year to own up.
You bloody Australians have a bit of pride and a bit of backbone. We're not going to stand aside and have our workers work for nothing. We are not going to stand aside and have our country owned by foreigners and us some sort of modern-day serf working for the foreign landlord and working from increasingly in a deregulated labour market, working increasingly for nothing.
So how did it come to all this? Where did we as a nation, as a race, go so wrong that we are now witness to a government-approved invasion of this country by a foreign people? Did all our politicians turn evil one day and decide to sell us out? Are the Jews to blame? What's going on? To answer all of these questions, we need to turn to the book of Deuteronomy in the Old Testament, and in particular chapter 28. Verse 1, "And it shall come to pass, if thou shalt hearken diligently unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe and to do all his commandments which I command thee this day, that the Lord thy God will set thee on high above all nations of the earth." Verse 3, "Blessed shalt thou be in the city, and blessed shalt thou be in the field." Verse 4, "Blessed shall be the fruit of thy body, and the fruit of thy ground, and the fruit of thy cattle, the increase of thy kine, and the flocks of thy sheep." Verse 7, "The Lord shall cause thine enemies that rise up against thee to be smitten before thy face. They shall come out against thee one way and flee before thee seven ways." Verse 8, "The Lord shall command the blessing upon thee in thy storehouses and in all that thou settest thine hand unto, and he shall bless thee in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee." In that selection of verses, we can see that if we obey God, he will bless every aspect of our lives, including our agricultural land, our children, and the safety of our nation. However, in verse 15, we read what will happen to us if we don't obey God. "But it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee." Verse 16, "Cursed shalt thou be in the city, and cursed shalt thou be in the field." Verse 18, "Cursed shall be the fruit of thy body, and the fruit of thy land, the increase of thy kine, and the flocks of thy sheep." Verse 42, "All thy trees and fruit of thy land shall the locust consume." 43, "The stranger that is within thee shall get up above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low." 44, "He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail." You'll note that verse 42 says that the locust shall consume the trees and the fruit of the land. Locusts in the Bible can mean people as well as actual locusts. Revelation chapter 9 verse 7 speaks of locusts with the faces of men. The Chinese and other races are swarming into and over this country like locusts and devouring all of our land and our produce and infrastructure. And ultimately, if we as a nation don't repent, they will make this country theirs. Verse 44 says that the stranger, that is the foreigner, shall become the head and we shall become the tail. The head rules the tail. The reason the government staged the Port Arthur massacre was to rob us of our guns, so when the Chinese takeover becomes official, we won't be able to do a damn thing about it. That takeover has been many years in the planning. I would say the planning goes back as far as the end of the White Australia policy in 1973. Anyway, if you think that Muslims and sodomite anti-racists are the greatest threat to this country's security, you are kidding yourself. But let's take this one step further, because not even the Chinese pose the greatest threat to us. The greatest threat to us is us. If we white Australians hadn't rejected God and his laws, if we hadn't thought that it's okay to worship other gods or embrace the lie that there is no living God, we would still exercise full control over this country's borders and the bounty that lies within them. The Chinese wouldn't be buying us up lock, stock and barrel, and when we walk through our cities and suburbs, we wouldn't have to play a game of spot the Aussie, because we would see only white Europeans. But we still think that we can take back our lands without God's help, that's provided we actually believe there is a God. There is only one solution to our problem, and it's found in 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 14. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. Until we as a people do that on a national basis, all of the rallies, all of the leaflet drops, all of the podcasts, hello everybody, all of the blogs and all of the efforts to make a homeland for ourselves will amount to zero. In the meantime, we need to turn back to God on a personal level and encourage our families to do likewise. We also need to move out of the cities and the suburbs and into the country. The best investment we can make for ourselves and our families, materially speaking, is to buy a property, it doesn't have to be more than an acre, on which we can grow our own fruit and vegetables and raise livestock. Because the days of Australia being able to supply an abundance of food for its population are rapidly coming to an end. And if we don't heed the signs now, if we don't act on them now, we're going to find ourselves in big, big trouble down the line. I won't tell you where you should move to, you'll have to do your own due diligence on that. But you want to be at least 100 miles or 160 kilometres away from a major city centre like Melbourne or Sydney. There are two reasons for this. One, you'll be less likely to have to defend your home from non-whites and others who will kill to get their hands on your food, and two, you'll be outside the blast radius of a nuclear bomb. We don't hear a lot about nuclear warfare as we once did, but that doesn't mean that it isn't a very real possibility. Luke chapter 21 verse 26 says that there will come a time when the powers of heaven will be shaken. The Greek word for heaven is Uranos, from which we derive the word uranium. The Israelis have the bomb and the latest CIA intel confirms this. And when they realise that the jig is finally up for them, they are sure to hit the launch button. Their motto is divided we stand, united we fall. When they go down, they plan to take the whole world with them. Matthew 24 verse 22 says that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. The elect are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Germanic and kindred peoples. I'm going to wrap up this edition by quoting the famous Russian philosopher and author Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who writes, "Over a half century ago, while I was still a child, I recall hearing a number of old people offer the following explanation for the great disasters that had befallen Russia. Quote, men have forgotten God. That's why all this has happened. Unquote. Since then, I have spent well nigh 50 years working on the history of our revolution. In the process, I have read hundreds of books, collected hundreds of personal testimonies, and have already contributed 8 volumes of my own toward the effort of clearing away the rubble left by that upheaval. But if I were asked today to formulate as concisely as possible the main cause of the ruinous revolution that swallowed up some 60 million of our people, I could not put it more accurately than to repeat, men have forgotten God. That's why all this has happened." On that note, folks, I'll say God bless, and I'll be back next week.
So we all yelled out, "Forgive us."